are ineligible classes as felons, and so under the restricted permit, section 7 of sub A, if the felony didn't involve the use of force or violence, the use or attempted use of a dangerous or deadly weapon, the use of a narcotic or dangerous drug, or the negligent or reckless use of a firearm. Now, of course, the rationale of this is that there are many convicted felons whose crimes are of such a nature that they wouldn't be the type of people who should be completely ineligible to possess any type of firearm. It somewhat conforms to present law in that an ex-convict can have a rifle, or a shotgun, a hunting weapon.
But if he has been involved with a force or violence or the use of a dangerous weapon, well then he can't get a permit.
Yes, and it would be more restrictive in that sense, because a felon that would fall within this sub A, he isn't going to be able to get a firearm permit, so he isn't going to be able to have any type of weapon.
I've got a question in section A, Roger, that you talk about the use of a narcotic or dangerous drug, whereas the much more serious conviction is the possession or selling, and it's the use of a narcotic drug is more usually, as a practical matter, the plea to a reduced charge.
Well, does this mean that does this mean any simple marijuana possession case is going to disenable him from?
That's what it. Yeah, Frank's actually got a good point. But yeah, the intention is that if the felony involved narcotics or dangerous drugs, they wouldn't be eligible to possess any type of firearm.
Well, if it's a simple little case, presumably it's not going to be a felony conviction. See, that's what we were thinking.
That's true. Probably.
This is for the individual under the influence at the time he commits the crime. Is that correct?
No.
This was meant to cover narcotics types felonies.
Mm-hmm.
But the use, that should be changed if that's what it's intended to do, because that would be a misdemeanor, wouldn't even be a felony.
Possession, sale, or transportation, or something like that.
Well, actually, I suppose we could use the term that we've used in narcotics as criminal dealing.
Mm-hmm.
Criminal dealing in narcotics are dangerous drugs, which would mean that was that graded as a indictable misdemeanor?
Yeah.
So that if it were treated as a misdemeanor, it wouldn't fall under this?
Well, it's really an exception. The subcommittee is recommending that it be graded as a Class B felony, which would carry a maximum of 10 years, but it would also have a special provision to allow the court to treat it as a misdemeanor. So it's rather an exception to our Class C felony approach, but in effect, it would be an indictable misdemeanor.
Is it criminal dealing in narcotics, is that possession also?
Yeah.
Or is that just?
Yeah.
Sale and possession.
Yeah, that's probably a good point. We could just say criminal dealing in narcotics or dangerous drugs.
Is that our only?
Well, now, wait a minute. The only trouble with that is, though, that's under our terminology. Now, supposing you've got a guy that has a felony conviction in some other state, we might be better
just say
spell it out, use, possession, or sale, or something like that.
You could say just a person whose felony conviction did not involve narcotic or dangerous drugs. Unless what you meant in drafting this was whether you're talking about a guy in line of some of the other language you used here, whether a person whose felony conviction did not involve the use of force or violence, the use or attempted use of a dangerous or deadly weapon, or the use of a narcotic or dangerous drug, it would fit there. If the felony involved a guy that was all hopped up on drugs and committed some robbery, if that's what you're trying to...
No,
because... But we were trying to stay away from this narcotic addict kind of language that some of these other statutes use. And
like the federal law, which it says the marijuana narcotic user or addict. Now, how that's... I don't even know if there's such a thing as a marijuana addict. But apparently under the federal law, they wouldn't require a conviction for the use of narcotic.
Well, I wonder if we shouldn't perhaps try to get at it by means of specifying the crimes. I'm thinking about there's a lot of people that end up with felony convictions even in marijuana cases, where the the reason he gets a felony conviction is because he's had a deprived background and so on. He doesn't have any schooling, he doesn't have any training and so on, and he's an ideal candidate for OCI, but he isn't a very dangerous person. So he ends up at OCI, and there he is. He's had it.
Well, what about the possibility, maybe, but I would suspect that some of these people who are convicted, particularly where we're dealing with marijuana or some of the dangerous drugs, that they may grow out of their problem. And if you put convicted of a crime involving a narcotic or dangerous drug, say within the past 5 years, 3 years, or something like that.
Well, that's probably true of all these classes, though, isn't it? I mean, many of the people convicted of these type of felonies perhaps are rehabilitated and never have any problem again for the remainder of their life.
Does this follow the language of the other states?
Sub A?
Mm-hmm.
No. I believe this is mostly came from the staff.
This is staff work.
In fact, the whole concept of a restricted firearm permit is a staff concept.
We were
to achieve the same result that other articles do, that is to allow certain persons to have long guns but not to have handguns.
We're trying to ease up on some of them a little bit. That's why we did this. But the language is, although some of these other states cover these same kinds of individuals in a little different manner, there are exclusions. But I think they all cover narcotics, drug users. Every one of them. Some even use. One says. In New Jersey, he has to state this exact language of the statute. Whether he is an alcoholic, habitual drunkard, addicted to narcotic drugs, or is a habitual user of goofballs. Goofballs are pep pills. Yeah. That's what it says right in the statute.
And that is cited, the New Jersey, of course, law is the model eventual law in the United States.
Goofballs.
Well, it's very questionable the man's going to say he's a drunkard, because a lot of good drinkers I know probably are, but they don't think they are anyway.
Goofballs are kind of like being dinghy in.
Yeah, but I never put dinghy in a statue either.
It gets in the commentary.
Well, but we were trying to get at the same kinds of individuals, and it was the rationale being that presumably, that at least it's they're prima facie dangerous.
Would this cover? Would this cover someone who committed a felony using an automobile, such as theft of an automobile? Is that the use of a dangerous or deadly weapon?
No, I don't think so.
Not
because we define dangerous and deadly weapon, I think the only place it would become a dangerous or deadly weapon is if he used it to assault someone or kill somebody, then that would be different. But otherwise, that is not would not be a forcible felony. And we were trying to take out of here the white-collar felons, and embezzlers, and check writers, and whatnot. Who
class discrimination.
White-collar
felons.
Put that in the commentary.
All right.
Oh, let's see.
Speaking of white-collar felons.
All right, Jeff. Sorry your car up there. Too bad you couldn't get worse before you came in. Excuse me interrupting. Go ahead.
Well, I personally think of a number of kids that I've sent to OCI following narcotics use, marijuana or otherwise. God, I'd hate to think that they could never have a shotgun or a rifle.
Why?
It's just that when they get through, presumably they're going to have some reasonable chance of behaving themselves. I don't think they'd be the least bit inclined to be dangerous with a deer rifle or a shotgun.
Well, you notice we have that type of exception sub B on these misdemeanors. As long as
we let them off on that time.
Well, what about on that, even the habitual criminal statute gives them a chance after they've been out of custody for
seven years
without any prior and without any intervening convictions, excludes those type of felonies from the Habitual Criminal Act, figuring that if a guy can go for 7 years without getting convicted of a felony, that he has sufficiently shown his rehabilitation, that if he falls into evil ways again, that this past record shouldn't make him a habitual criminal.
Well, do you think this exception should apply only to the narcotics cases or to all felons?
Why narcotics? So why are we so hot for narcotic users? Are they horribly dangerous with guns?
Well, I don't know if it's such a problem in Oregon, but ordinarily they do have to resort to crime quite often to support their habits.
Well, people on under the influence of amphetamines, particularly amphetamines in conjunction with alcohol, there's a violence about it. Contrary to belief, heroin makes people non-violent usually. They can go on the nod.
Well, except that...
Except that they are so addicted they got to resort to violence to get their stuff if they don't have
most
it.
Most of it's property crimes, most of it's shoplifting, burglary, that kind
of
thing.
Well, there's quite a bit of robbery, however, by heroin addicts.
Well, one of the most dangerous groups in possession of weapons, of course, is the chronic drunkard. Not because he's committing crimes, but he's very unstable when he's intoxicated. But it's hard to define the class. Who is a drunkard and who isn't?
Just offhand, I see a great number of violent crimes using firearms take place between husband and wife, so we might say anybody who's married.
Very good idea.
Unless they've been married for 10 years or more, which would indicate that they've resolved most
of
their
have a history of family violence.
They're the worst of all. Yeah. 17 years is supposed to be the most dangerous year.
When they get them in, they get them good. By that point, who cares? Well, another ludicrous sideline.
Well, it points up, really, though. It points up the difficulty that you run into in this darn thing.
But
I notice Margot Perry, in her own inimitable way, you know, these are really sarcastic comments.
They weren't really meant for you to see. They're meant for me to see.
That's
what I thought.
You know, what surprises me is that, you know, this law, or this draft, is so... Not because we did it, but it's...
That's a terrible
law. So much stronger than House Bill 1546 that the Kennedy Action Corps was willing to put their name on.
That's a bad law.
She didn't say one good thing about the approach. Not one. I mean, they're all sarcastic criticism.
Yeah, but I told her to read it over and note her things that she thought were false. So that's what she's done.
I'm not sure whether she's just obnoxious or naive or both. But
that in the commentary.
But she doesn't like the exception we gave for the misdemeanors. And I'm sure that the Kennedy Action Corps...
Well, I don't...
If they're making exceptions for the felons, they're really going to be upset.
Of course, I can understand why she feels if you're going to have it tight, and why begin building in all kinds of loopholes.
Of course, their bill would...
She got to you, Don, is that what you're trying to say?
Their bill would say that you can't get a permit if you're addicted to a narcotic drug. And I can imagine the monstrosities of administration that would come from that.
Well, yeah, there's no way to make that determination.
How the hell do you determine addiction to a narcotic drug?
Mm-hmm. That's like saying if you've ever committed a felony, not necessarily that you ever was arrested for it or convicted for it.
Well, and of course, if you start using this term narcotics addict, then you run into these constitutional questions, possibly, that it's a disease or... If you can't imprison them for a disease, then how can you disable them from, indirectly convict them of a crime of illegal possession of a firearm by making them ineligible if they're an addict? I think the same principle would apply.
Well, but Don, on that, I don't think anybody could say mental illness is a crime, and we're certainly restricting those people. And so... it's because of what they are, not why they are.
Well, the term addict is a misnomer. You know, nowadays that isn't used. It's either physical or psychological dependency. And so far as actual addicts are concerned, or physical dependency, so far as heroin is concerned, or any of the derivatives of morphine and so forth, there's only about 200 in the state of Oregon. And that's the opiates are addicting, of course. And the only other addiction, possible or physical addiction, is the barbiturates. And there's no way of telling how many people are addicted to barbiturates, but that is addicting. But as far as the hard narcotics are concerned, you're only talking about over 200 people in the state of Oregon. There's 135 that's listed by the Federal Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs.
We can identify
only
right by name.
Is it bromoseltzer addictive? What is it? Why is it? Why are people?
Coffee is addictive.
Well, there's an interdicted list for bromoseltzer.
There's something. that has to do with nerves. I think we used to have a fellow. In fact, I think he's still employed by the state. I used to see him quite often. He just shaped like that, and he was drinking that bromoseltzer all day long. But that's the only thing I've ever.
Well, there are in Portland. There are drugstores that do not sell bromoseltzer to certain people. There's a guy that lived in St. John's that no drugstore in St. John's would sell him bromoseltzer, and he had to go all over town trying to get his bromoseltzer.
Maybe we ought to call him in as a consultant. Next time you're down in Salem,
involving the use of narcotic, dangerous drug, or bromoseltzer.
room.
There's many dangerous drugs that aren't so designated by law that do the same thing that other drugs that are designated by law do. Now, we have one that you can get any place. Asmodor is a very dangerous drug. And yet the State Board of Pharmacy hasn't seen fit to include it in its designation of dangerous drugs, and it's used, has been used all over the state by these kids.
What is that?
Asmodor.
What does it do? Does it give them a high, or?
Oh, sure.
What is it? Some kind of patent medicine?
Yeah, it's for asthmatic conditions, and it's real excellent for the conditions if you use as it's prescribed or as it's indicated on the package. You can get it,
he was here
smoke
a
it,
ago.
You chew it, you can ingest it anyway into the system. These kids go ahead and use it and get a real good high on the hallucinogenic type.
Will they take it massive doses?
Yeah, they take little bigger doses than is intended, but they can smoke it too. They smoke it in pipes. Cigarette paper.
Well, what's the pleasure of the committee on us to Section 7?
Now, we've got some of that same language, course, in Section 6 about the use of a narcotic or dangerous drug.
Well, I think that, and I'll move, I guess we amend 7A to delete. The use of, I guess it'd do it.
Did not involve a narcotic or dangerous drug.
Mm-hmm.
What?
But then again, I think that we.
Are you enlarging the class or narrowing the class of
that's kind of vague, isn't it?
Well, the use of a narcotic or dangerous drug isn't even a felony. It's a misdemeanor in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're not saying the crime of use of a narcotic or dangerous drug, though, Frank. I mean, you could use it without committing the crime of use of it.
Let me ask you this. Suppose I have a. I come in and say I want to get a restricted permit from Captain Howard. And I say, yeah, I've had a felony conviction, but it reads so and so, whatever it may be. How is he to determine whether or not the conviction did or did not involve the use of force or violence?
He's going to have to contact the police agency that where the conviction.
Did he look at the police report?
Unless it's a crime that by its very nature.
Armed robbery.
Uses force or violence, armed robbery, assault with a dangerous weapon, rape.
No, it's possible that you're not only the problem of verifying whether the crime involved one of the uses, but you're going to get into some disputes, I would think, occasionally. In other words, with the applicant claiming no, that doesn't fall within that. The department saying it does.
Is there any possibility that he could have applied to the court for relief rather than go this way?
You know, I don't know a good way around this whole thing.
I mean, the
just
applicant?
Give the Department of State Police power to promulgate rules for the issuance of licenses.
We oppose it. I just wonder if.
That's going to solve all the rest of the nutty problems in the state. We give some agency the power to make rules.
I just wonder if we couldn't get at it by naming the specific crimes.
Well, we do it by a graded offense approach? Any offense which is not a class?
I don't know how many crimes it would be.
Is there any comment at all to my question, or is my question so absurd it doesn't deserve a second? That rather than go this route, we allow the person to apply to the court for relief.
Well, we have a procedure that if they're denied a firearm permit, that there is an appeal procedure.
I'll leave these kind of issues, though, in the hands of the court. That if they apply to the court should make a determination whether they should, in fact, be authorized one this time.
You mean to initially apply to the court rather than
all these guys, yeah. A person whose felony conviction did not involve the use of force or violence. He gets a note from the judge. You get him back your note from the doctor. Kind of idea.
Oh, I see, but...
Same idea as the doctor. The judge just makes a determination. Okay, he's... Guy's really coming around. I think I'll give him a note saying he has a gun now.
You mean the, a court from the jurisdiction where the conviction arose?
Well, I wouldn't even go that far. I'd just say a court. If,
well, of course, a court in this jurisdiction, for example, would have the same problem as the Department of State Police on checking on a conviction in North Carolina.
Well, I think part of your question is answered, really, under our appeal proceedings, because if the guy felt that he was unjustifiably denied a permit, then he could go ahead and appeal it, and then the judge is going to have to just determine whether or not there were grounds sufficient to for the denial. So you're going to have to get into that, and if the judge decided this wasn't a crime involving force or violence, then
I was just wondering why we just don't leave this whole bunch of things to the judge.
Well,
the guy really wants
one. Yeah, but he's not a.
Leave it to the state police. Don't leave it to the courts.
I think the courts would be preferred.
Yeah.
Here's a question. Prosecutor's discretion. Leave it to the prosecutor.
Let's leave it up to the State House of Representatives.
Well, if you would happen to do that.
Or let's say the Board of Commissioners of each county.
That's a whale of an idea.
Special commission for passing upon restricted gun permits.
And then we've made the full circle, except for the staff of the Criminal Law Revision Commission.
Well, the other answer is the traditional approach, and that is to say that a convicted felon, period, can only get a restricted firearm permit, which would allow him, which would be the state of the present law, to possess a long gun, regardless of what the felony conviction was.
That's the easy way.
Well, let me ask
that's
you this.
Less tight than this, though.
Let me ask you this, Roger.
Is no.
Under our draft here, if I own a rifle, am I going to have to get a restricted firearm permit?
Well, anybody that owns a rifle is going to have to get a permit. But now, you mean if you're a convicted felon that owns a rifle?
No. Just, now maybe I'm getting my...
No, you'd get a regular permit. You'd get a regular permit. This is for the various classes who we think shouldn't have handguns, but...
Okay, yeah. I'm getting my permit and registration.
Yeah, we haven't got the registration.
Confused.
For example, if you're 17 years old, we've said in Section 6 that you can't have a firearm permit. You're not old enough. But then in Section 7, we say that you can if your parents would submit a certificate giving you a permission. Mm-hmm. And then you'll have a restricted firearm permit, but you still would be allowed to possess a handgun.
Yeah. Okay. All righty.
Any other questions on Section 7?
Well, what would you think of taking out the clause about the narcotics and dangerous drugs completely? Because we've got drugs, alcoholism, and mental illness covered under ineligible to receive a permit, period, under Section 6. And if we say it involves the use of it involving a narcotic or dangerous drug, you could have a felony conviction, say you might have a burglary committed by a guy under the influence of drugs. And how are the state police going to know whether that's a crime involving narcotics or dangerous drugs or not? I mean, the guy hasn't used any weapon or used any force or anything. Do we want to deny him
Why don't we just take it out?
If we took it out, the kind of guy who's who has, as a result of being under the influence, or as a result of wanting to support his habit, has committed a forcible crime, you're going to have
him
covered
anyway.
Mm-hmm. Or if he's ever been committed or confined for treatment,
for addiction,
he's going to be ineligible anyway. I think it would be pretty broad language for the state police to try to apply.
It'd be an administrative nightmare, as Representative Frost has already pointed out.
You know, Lee Johnson's approached this whole thing, just restricting, absolutely restricting the use of handguns to law enforcement officers, and forget the rest of it. It's probably not a bad idea. It eliminates all this other stuff.
Well, yeah, some of those more radical proposals do simplify things. They just outlaw guns, would be preferable from my point of view, then you don't have to fool with any
Yeah, but the other guns have a legitimate purpose. The handgun doesn't.
Well, of course, the problem is there are many people that own handguns that would dispute that.
There are some people with pretty views and opposition.
I sent you a copy yesterday. I'll give you.
I run across.
I found that out.
And it creates a difficult problem of getting a hold of all the handguns in the state that are now in possession of people who aren't inclined to volunteer them. I'll show it to you.
Is there a motion to strike the words "the use of a narcotic or dangerous drug" in sub A? I guess not.
Dave isn't going to take any part in this whatsoever, Jed.
We still have our rules against being an accomplice on the part.
Okay.
I'll move that.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
That would apply to 6 Carrying. Also.
Seven.
You know, I acquired a handgun about 3 weeks ago in kind of a strange way.
As a fee?
No, I had a guy who was charged with assault with a dangerous weapon, and it was finally reduced to just possession. And the sentencing judge put him on probation for a year with a condition that he could not possess a firearm for a period of probation. And the guy jumped up and said, "I don't want to see that gun. Never have a gun in my life. Don't want a gun. Give it to Mr. Frost. Just give it to him. Give it to him. I don't want it." The judge looked at me and said, "Do you want it?" I said, "Well, okay." So I had a 25 caliber automatic pistol, which somebody tells me gives the illusion of owning a deadly weapon.
I had a deputy once that shot himself in the leg with one.
We had one shot in his foot. Quick drawing. Typical cop.
Yeah.
We were practicing quick drawing.
I think that we should give some consideration to the moratorium to a person who has spent a certain number of years on good behavior outside an institution on the 7A. That if he's behaved for 7 years after getting out, the same as the habitual criminal thing goes, that he probably has shown his responsibility enough to at least own a rifle.
How about a fish rod?
A what?
Nothing. I don't like to loosen it up anymore. Every time we loosen it up, that just lets that one area of exposure open. You can erode it away till it's practically nothing.
Well, I don't think that that'd be eroding it away, but I think it does give some encouragement for a person to mend his ways, not get caught.
Do we really worship a gun that much? That's really a big deal. The guy's going to stray straight, so if he stays straight for 7 years, he can.
I'm talking about the being able to possess a pistol, but to be able to have a rifle, which now he can do anyway.
Well, Frank, I won't